Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
It is breathtaking reporting, a story that will stay with you far beyond after you read it. I've been thinking about the reporting of Andy Mannix, the video and photography of Renee Jones Schneider, since I first read it on Friday. It's a story that begins with a 911 call of a woman who had died the 4th of July weekend in 2019, when police arrived in South St. Paul. They found a woman dead in a basement that looked like a dungeon. I'll give you a warning one more time that we are talking about an adult topic here, so you can be prepared for that conversation. It is an incredible mystery that's been going on for 4 years. Andy Mannix joins us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Andy, it's such a heartbreaking, maddening story that you and Renee tell with such empathy and detail. So first of all, congratulations on your work. Tell us the story of how you first started asking questions about what happened to Heather Meyer.
And thank you for that, Jason. Appreciate it. This started about almost exactly 2 years ago when I got a call from Heather's mother. I agreed to meet her for coffee, and we spent a few hours having probably a pretty interesting conversation if you happened to be at that Caribou Coffee in Lakeville.
You overhear the details.
Yeah. For about 4 hours, and a lot of what is in the story hadn't actually happened yet. You know, he wasn't arrested for some of the things that he ended up being arrested for, but she felt that her daughter's death had not been properly investigated. She had been trying to connect some dots herself and had been doing a good job in terms of getting the body camera, getting a bunch of records that as a family member she had access to and I wouldn't as a journalist. And I sort of left that meeting thinking, she's gone down every avenue that she knows, and everyone has been a dead end. And
so
let's
set the table here for what South St. Paul police first found, and then what mom discovered, because the story unfolds in chapters in this special section in the Star Tribune yesterday. And the online digital version of this is incredible as well. But when police showed up, Heather Meyer, 33, South St. Paul, she's dead in essentially a sex dungeon. There were sex toys, there were chains, there was a whip. And so police pretty early found out that she was involved in a lifestyle that really colored, at least based on your reporting, how they investigated this case, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, you had the police, calling her mom within less than an hour of finding the body. Seeing this woman, she was naked. She had was covered in scars. She was looked like someone who had been tortured, fresh cuts, old ones, things like this. And within an hour or so, when they called the mom to inform her that her daughter had died, they called it a suicide in that phone call. So I think that they were pretty quick to see this as something that was self-inflicted or that was an accident before the investigation really started. One of the people that we interview is the death investigator who was on the scene, and her take on it was, this is incredibly suspicious death. And you treat every scene like a homicide until you prove it's not. And the police sort of did the opposite, where they treated it like it was a suicide, like no foul play, just right off the bat.
Incredibly suspicious, really, when you think about the fact that, is this the way a 33-year-old woman who had three kids upstairs in that very house would end her life? No suicide note. It makes you think, at least based on the circumstances, okay, either this was some sort of sex play that went too far, or this was abuse or an accident. Going to suicide, you can understand why the mother here would say, come on, like this doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and I think no one wants to believe that,
for sure,
you know, someone they love would end their lives that way, and certainly it does happen. But right. I think that this is a story about about victims who are deemed, you know, imperfect by the criminal justice system. How you know, someone's lifestyle can impact how law enforcement, prosecutors, judges, you know, look at a case. Before they have all the evidence. I mean, one thing that was a little bit surprising to me when I saw that body camera video was realizing that the same police department had responded to a pretty serious domestic assault case at that house involving Heather just 2 months earlier, you know, in which they had to take the guy down, her boyfriend down, with rubber bullets and tasers. That's not the type of like everyday domestic assault call. So I, you know, the fact that they were so quick to go to suicide with this, you know, to tell the mom it was a suicide, right, was just a little bit mind boggling to me as I was reporting it.
Andy Mannix is with the Star Tribune. His investigation was a special section in the paper yesterday. You can read it online at startribune.com into what happened to Heather Meyer. You're investigating and reporting took multiple years. You got a number of other people, and to put a fine point on it so our listeners know what's going on, Heather was a part of the BDSM community. So she was active online in chat rooms, but BDSM is bondage, dominance, submission, sadomasochism. So it seemed like, and this is what struck me about this story, I don't know if it's what, and obviously it's a human tragedy involving Heather and the loss of a young mother and a young life. But you mentioned the fact that when you have an imperfect victim, sometimes you wonder, is it the police? Is it the prosecutor? Who is worried that jurors won't be able to understand that, yes, she was involved in a lifestyle that involved violence in a way, but there's a difference between consensual behavior and abuse and criminal behavior.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that is, you know, a tension that we really want to explore in the story. I mean, I think there's a lot of misconceptions about BDSM and it being about, you know, wanting to withstand or inflict pain when it's really about wanting to take control. So the person who is, you know, the submissive, the person who's getting, whatever, like enduring whatever the action is actually the one who should be in total control. You know, these women set hard limits, right? They set safe words, and this sort of slowly and then, you know, sort of bulldozed right over that line. To a point where it really didn't resemble BDSM at all. It was purely, I think, abuse.
In your process of trying to pitch this story and get the paper and get your editors to allow you to follow it, I can't help but think that it would be challenging for the editor, just like the police or a prosecutor might be worried about jurors and the fact that they would immediately dismiss Heather Meyer, saying, well, you know, she chose to be in this sort of, you know, edgy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Were your editors worried about this? I'm impressed they greenlit it. I got to be honest, like just from a subject matter, I think the people have received it way better than I wondered, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, to come out and say, I want to do a 10,000 word, you know, story on, you know, BDSM, is a bit of a hard sell for a daily newspaper, a family newspaper. But
right.
Credit to my, and one that's kind of a pure narrative, just focusing on one case rather than having some kind of, data point that spells out right. why this matters. Credit to my editors. They, I think, did get it early on. And when I wrote, one of the things I realized I had to do was sort of like put it into action, like my vision into action and write it. Because I had this idea of how I wanted to write it. And once I sort of sent them a draft, they were immediately responded really positively. And they got it and they thought readers would get it. And we're all, thrilled to see that the response so far has been very positive. I think people do understand that this is a bigger picture story about the criminal justice system, even though it focuses on just this one case.
Yeah. Many times victims are imperfect. They are. It's just the reality of you've covered courts since you started getting into journalism. And victims mm-hmm. are very rarely is it someone where you think like, oh, a jury's going to be 100% sympathetic.
Yeah, and we do see it a lot, and it's really a difficult thing, though, to kind of distill into a story.
Yeah.
This idea of kind of imperfect victims, and I think that that's what what made me so interested with this case is I saw kind of the potential of this does sort of distill something that we see a lot, but it's sort of hard to get across to readers. I think the media, newspapers are. We treat victims differently, right?
Yeah.
There's a shooting at the state fair that'll run the front page for a week, but if there's one in a place like North Minneapolis, maybe not. So I think that, sort of thinking more about how to talk about victims and this like this value judgment that we as a society place on victims was something that I've been interested in for a while.
Andy Mannix with the Star Tribune. Andy, this case still sort of sits in this like, uncertain resolution because you tell the story about the man who was sort of the dominant, certainly much evidence indicates that he was an abuser, but the cause of death here is still undetermined, right?
Yeah, correct. The one in Minnesota. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's,
and you found multiple other victims, other people involved in relationships with this man.
Yeah. I think we have, not including Heather, five victims, and he's facing, without giving too much away, charges for two of those that all happened after Heather's death. So it's like the failure to stop this person has really resulted in a lot more allegations, and not just in Minnesota too, right? Like we've got three other, me and Renee, the photographer, went to three other states. To report the story, to meet the women there and talk to them and have them show us kind of where these things took place. I think that there, that's another element of it is like when we don't believe victims, that can lead to more victims.
Yeah. Yeah. This could have been stopped. You think of, yeah. Andy, just incredible reporting and really the courage also of, of Heather's mom to come mm-hmm. forward to you and tell this story, Tracy Detling. You couldn't have done it without that initial conversation, right?
You know what? She, and not just that, but I mean, she gave me her daughter's phone, that had a lot of this evidence that's cited in the story. And not just her, the other women who are victims in the story, being willing to put their names to these allegations, being willing to share some evidence that, as you can imagine, with the subject matter is gets into some extremely personal, intimate territory and being willing to talk about that, I just think is exceptionally brave because that's what it took to tell this story.
Andy, thank you. Really appreciate it. Check out the story at StarTribune.com. Andy Mannix with the Star Tribune. Thanks, Andy. 4:51.
Thank you, Jason.
We'll be right back here on Drive Time.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.